This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
This is the Broadway Boys Podcast through the Hockey Podcast Network, and you're listening to Season 3, Episode 63. As the New York Rangers have begun their second round series of the Stanley Cup playoffs against the Canes and drop Game 1 in overtime, a real heart-wrencher. They almost squeaked it out. They were two and a half minutes away from doing so, but give up a late goal, and then Ian Cole in overtime just flings a puck on net. It goes off Lindgren's stick and into the net, and no chance for Shesterkin. So, yeah, a lot to talk about. I'm recording this right moments after the game has ended, and yeah, it stings because this looked like a game that the New York Rangers were actually going to run away with, winning Game 1 on the road. So yeah, we'll get into that. I Andy here, by the way. I am alone tonight. James unfortunately has some other duties to attend to, but he was just texting me. He is not happy about the way this game ended. And why would you be? But I mean, I think there's a lot to sift through for this game, good and bad. Coming on our last podcast, when between the adulation and the jubilation James and I were feeling as the Rangers somehow survived a Game 7 and a seven-round series against the Penguins, in which they looked absolutely dreadful at times, we spoke about the need for this New York Rangers team to shore up defensively, a need to push more five-on-five offense. And through two periods of this game, of Game 1, the Rangers were able to do that. Kid line looked even more dangerous at time. They were clearly the Rangers' best line all night, and not only just making chances, but looking like they had more time and space and confidence to dictate the pace of play. And yeah, I mean, they get the first goal off of a Tony DeAngelo turnover that Alexi Lafreniere gets a good stick on, and just poise and patience and waits. And then the three of them rush the net, and he just slots a beautiful pass across the ice to Hedl, who on a one times it into the side of the net. And there you go. The Rangers go up early, and it's a shock because honestly, the forecheck of Carolina that they're so famous for didn't seem to be in place for two periods. The Rangers dictated most of the play in the first. I would say even the second, where the Canes were trying to create and they'd get their chances, but they were really kept the Rangers did an excellent job keeping them out of the slot, kept them the outside, and just, yeah, they were just playing tight checking hockey. And it was refreshing because we were like, wow, they've actually made some adjustments. Although you knew the Canes didn't look like the Hurricanes we'd seen all season. And, you know, a lot has been made about the fact that the style of hockey they play, it's very hard to play that for a full, you know, four rounds of the playoffs, because it just wears on you, just constantly trying to grind teams down with a fast forecheck and a relentless forecheck. But the Rangers looked like they were going to get away with it. Hedl almost scores again. He's unable to lift the puck, but Ronta makes an excellent save on it anyway. Shesterkin makes some crazy saves when he needs to, although he doesn't have to do too much. But as the game went on, he had to make more and more saves. Yeah, and I mean, it gets to the third period, and you knew the Canes were going to come out house of fire, and they finally did. And lo and behold, the Rangers were on their heels and got running around a bit. And whereas before they were doing a much better job of, even if they had to elevate pucks into the neutral zone just to relieve some pressure, offensive pressure, and try to regroup, they were having trouble keep getting pucks out, and the players of Carolina were swarming and circling and keeping pucks in. And yeah, the Rangers were, we had seen this in the last round, and they were running around. But, you know, they kind of weathered the storm early in the third period. And then the Kid line goes down again, and Kaapo Kakko has a wide open net after, I believe, it gets put through the crease by either Hedl or, I don't know if it was Fox or if it was Hedl or Lafreniere, I forget, but he's got a wide open net and he just whiffs on it. And oh man, that would have been the game. It was wide open. It was right there. And he literally just whiffs on it. And he can't believe it. You can tell. He also gets a breakaway later in the game and he just kind of flubs it too. Although it looked at first, it looked like it might've been a hook on the hands, but it was showed that it was not. It was a clean play and a good non-call. The Rangers was upset. And then with 2 minutes left, though, it looks like they're going to pull it out. And Carolina is pressing, goes down, and they just kind of slice with speed Panarin, who looks just hurt and slow and just not willing to do what he wants. And Kopp, who looks just debilitated at times. Truba gets, drifting again, and Keandre is too aggressive again, and Aho just kind of slices one through the slot. He gets a puck as he cuts, and he puts it on his backhand, and Shesterkin unbelievably makes the first stop, but no one is able to get him on the rebound and then protect him, and then he gets put in the net by Aho. And I knew then and there, I'm like, oh, this game's over. They're going to lose in overtime, which is a shame because I had so much hope and from the way they were playing, but I think it just showed that as much as the strides the team seemed to make in one game, you just know that realistically they still have a long way to go. But, I said this in the last podcast, it's all kind of house money to me. And just the more it looks like they can make adjustments and grow and improve and the kids can get better and dictate more play and the terms and just push offense, the happier I am. But yeah, I think it's becoming incredibly evident. Lindgren again, multiple times going in the locker room. You can just see how many Rangers are banged up here. Lindgren's on one foot. Andrew Kopp can barely skate. He looks like his appendix is going to burst on the next odd shift. He gets hit too hard. As my cat is trying to knock my mic over. Oscar, I'm trying to record. Thank you very much. Please stay back there. Yeah, I mean, Panarin, again, you could tell he's hurt. He's just not as dynamic. He's just a little too much stick checking from him. He's not getting in with his body like he usually does and get his low center of gravity for a smaller guy. His wiriness, which he's used all year to separate pucks, he's just kind of chasing it a little bit too much. So, yeah, it's upsetting. But, yeah, I I'm trying to take the good with the bad because in a lot of ways it did seem like a step forward. At least seems like it might be. I thought it was going to be a massacre, but unless Carolina plays pedal to the metal every game for three periods from now on, which I don't think they will. I think it's tough. I think they'll have their moments, but it looks like the Rangers can at least be in the mix there. Obviously the story of this game was the Rangers had chances to put it away and they failed. And then Carolina, all they needed was one, and then you get a lucky bounce. And Igor was great. He was absolutely excellent. He did everything you'd want him to do in this game, but it's just, it doesn't matter. And Zibanejad, although I thought he looked like he had jump at times and he was engaging and battling, after being excellent at faceoff the last two games, he got absolutely crushed in the dot by Sebastian Aho. And yeah, it's just, again, I think even Ray Ferraro on ESPN was saying that you got to sometimes just, it's not even so much about scoring that shift, because as fancy stats and the advanced analytics community know, that sometimes the importance of faceoff might be a little overblown. But it maybe not so much in the sense that if you lose in your own zone, you can lose, but you just have to, it has to be a contested puck. You have to at least try to win the subsequent battle after the puck gets rimmed or won back to the defenseman. It can't be clean, and it was just a lot of clean losses. And then it's hard for it. You don't get as much confident when you're not getting puck touches in the opposing zone, even if you don't end up scoring on them. So, again, the kids look great. Keandre again was flying around the ice, body and guys. He comes back to stop Seth Jarvis on a rush. Who's a fast, speedy, and talented and skilled kid, and Keandre just flies down the ice and literally just snuffs him out and like pushes him to the ice is what you want. My cat, oh my God, is almost pushed my mic off of my desk. He's being he wants attention right now, and I'm not giving to him. He's very upset. Sorry about that. Anyway, the kids continue to impress and grow and take on bigger roles, which is important because if you're like, I think most Ranger fans understand that on outside of a Cinderella situation here, this is most likely not the year they're going to contend really for making the cup final or just being a team that's really, really dangerous to get there. But it's such a good sign, just the way Lafreniere again looks like the Rangers' best forward on the ice, just, you know, turning over pucks with forecheck and a good stick, and then his skating, which he's really learned to use his move his feet more. Kako looks so looked and listen. Right now, most of Rangers' social media is furious at Kako for fanning on that. They think he cost the Rangers the game. He had so many chances. He was one of the only forwards that did anything. So, you know, I mean, this game was cost by the rest of the Rangers forwards not being dangerous at all. So you can say what you want. Yes, it was there and it sucks that he shanked it. You don't know if he got the yips or whatever, but you know, it's not to say it's on him. Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, you know, like Nino Niederreiter on a breakaway hit the crossbar, Zibanejad hit a crossbar too. Like, it's just, yes, it was wide open and he shouldn't have shanked it, but it was just in split to second shot in real time. And it was open and surprised him. He just kind of tried to guide it in and he just missed and it sucked. But, you know, it's not, I'm defending him. I don't know how James feels, but I maintain it is not Kaapo Kakko's fault. It is not. It's the fact that the rest, they could only put one goal on, you know, or his line was the only line that could put up a goal on Ranta on a night where it seemed like Carolina didn't really have it for two periods. So, yeah, it's really painful. But, again, I do think, if anything, it showed that the Rangers, they might lose the series. They might get swept the series. But I don't think it'll be in as embarrassing of a fashion where they're literally run out of the building, you know. Although I could be wrong. Who knows if this, the way the Carolina play in the third period just plants the seed of doubt and the Rangers feel are getting flashbacks to the last series at in Haunted and just all of a sudden get catatonic and stop moving their legs. But I think it's just important to be in the fight and be in the battle. And I even sensed it on the Rangers bench when they were dictating most of the terms early in the game. Every time the camera would pan over the bench and do a flyby in between whistles in the last series, the Rangers kind of looked a little nervous and up and down and looking around and twitchy. Whereas now they went over their bench, it looked a little bit more workmanlike, like coming off for a shift, you know, shut the brain down, deep, you know, 1,000-yard stare, wait till Turk calls your line again and then go out there. So I think just in that sense, you definitely sense the growth. And again, the Rangers won the first two periods in terms of the high danger chances. So it showed that this may be what James and I kind of theorized in the last, that even though you might say it's a bad matchup for the Rangers in terms of what we thought with Pittsburgh, I think the fact that Carolina is not as heavy as a team as Pittsburgh, you know, they do have some bigger guys, but they also have some smaller guys. I think that really helped out because it seemed like at times sometimes with Pittsburgh's D and just some of their big forwards coming to help out, the Rangers had a harder time winning their puck battles on the wall when they were going against guys like, you know, Aho and Natchez and Kotkaniemi and Seth Jarvis and D'Angelo and Brett Pesce and their smaller D. It was easier for them to win those battles because their Rangers actually were bigger and more formidable in that sense. So that was good. But, you know, again, that relentless style of Carolina, once they finally turned it on, it got them in the end. And again, hockey is cruel because that goal was the overtime goal was a fluke. You know, or not a fluke, but you have to put the puck on it and good things will happen. But, you know, Ian Cole, excuse me, also former Penguin, yuck. He just kind of throws it on net and Lindgren's trying to stand in front of Igor to be ready. And it goes literally, he tips it himself by accident into the net. Igor had no chance. And Igor just kind of tosses his stick in disgust. And I don't blame him. I was just so deflating. And when they were so close, they were literally 2 minutes. But that's kind of part of being a young team, right? Is just you realize the mistakes you can make. And I think it's not so much, you know, I'm sure that they're disgusted. They're deflated that they lost, but they're also, I think they're almost more deflated that they were 2 minutes away from winning. Like they were right there. And they let it slipped away. And after they had been under siege so much that they almost played a game on their own terms and won a game on their own terms. And it just at
fell apart at the last moment, just focused at the last moment. And that's might be the final piece of the puzzle for them, is that you bear down in the final 2 minutes. Whereas since they were coming from behind in all those other series, or, you know, it wasn't so much, you know, maybe outside of defending the, you know, game two, they had obviously it was tied to going into overtime in game one versus the Pens, or triple, and then it goes triple OT and they lose. So they didn't really have to bear down to defend a lead. You know, game two, they kind of broke it open, so they were comfortably ahead. And then they, you know, they lose game three in Pittsburgh and four. And then, so it's not like they were defending leads there. And then, so, you know, game five was kind of like the only game really where they had, they were kind of defending any sort of lead, you know? So they just didn't have to do it so much. And this might be the final piece of the puzzle for them. So it stings, it hurts, it sucks. I'm upset because they were so close. They were literally right there. The game, they had victory there, and now they're down again, and now they're, I'm sure, second guessing their inability to maintain their structure, and it stinks and it sucks. You saw Lafreniere literally, you know, snapped his stick on the boards and just, you know, and on his way out, he was furious. But listen, it proved to me there will be, even if they lose, like I said, even if they get swept, there, it'll be, the Rangers are not going to totally roll over and die. And it's not, hopefully it will not be, it seemed to at least be promising the fact that it hopefully will not be as one-sided and embarrassing as it had been. And this, it'll be a great building block for future, you know, success with this team. And listen, credit to Carolina. They've been in the postseason a few years in a row now. They're used to this deep being deep. And if in a lot of ways you kind of felt like they were going to pull a reverse Rangers, a Ranger on the team. They were going to out-Ranger the Rangers and just like, yeah, we slept walk, but we only gave it the one goal. And all right, we're going to turn it on now. And that sounds familiar then to Rangers fans because, yeah, that was their whole shtick for most of the season. Hockey fans, the pursuit for the Stanley Cup is on. And DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, has an unbelievable offer for the most exciting playoffs in all of sports. New customers can bet $5 on any team to win and get $100 in free bets no matter what, win or lose. Looking to turn a small bet into a big payday during the playoffs? With DraftKings Same Game Parlays, you can do just that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets, like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more. It's your shot at an even bigger payout. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. And best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, bet $5 on any NHL team to win, and get $100 in free bets no matter what. That's promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See the show notes for details. We look onward to game two. And yeah, I think the interesting thing will be at it's just the Kopp, Strome, Panarin line had not much going. And the Kreider's advantage of a Toronto line had trouble again getting things going. Again, the Kid line seems to be the only line that can be consistent on a game-to-game basis. So he's not going to change it. But at what point do you maybe explore, I don't know, trying something different, putting Vetrano with Strome and Panarin, or putting Kopp with Kreider and Zibanejad? I mean, Kopp had the pass to Zibanejad on the game-tying goal in game seven in the third period, in the, you know, the dying minutes of the third period. So who knows? Maybe that might be something worth exploring, because like I said, it's you clearly Panarin's hurt, and clearly Kopp is hurt, and two-thirds of that line being hurt, and Strome is Ryan Strome, in that he's a, you know, can be a little bit of a one-track mind and just not committal enough sometimes in his defensive responsibilities. So yeah, it's just Turk might have to do something about that. Having Tyler Mott back has been great. And I thought, honestly, I thought Ryan Reeves wasn't horrible this game. Although, again, at times he tends to hem his line in a lot in the defensive zone because his inability to clear pucks or get pucks out or make pucks, you know, passes with possession is frustrating. But, you know, I don't know if he was the worst, but I don't, at what point do you say maybe we sit, you know, Revo here and get Dryden Hunt back in, who's probably fresh, right? You know, have more speed because Tyler Mott has been excellent. And he's at times Turk has had no problem moving him up for a shift with the Zibanejad line or, you know, one of the other lines just to give a guy a breather. And just because Mott has energy and can use his speed to get to pucks first and dig pucks out and negate icings and all that fun stuff. So, but yeah, unfortunately, the Rangers, from a depth perspective, are outmatched by the Hurricanes, unfortunately. But, you know, they have heart and they were in this game. You can't say they weren't. They almost won it, but it really stinks. But we'll see if any adjustments are made for game two. And we'll see how the game two plays out, which will be very interesting because will Carolina have more, you know, more oomph and jump from the get-go? I actually was surprised. I thought Pittsburgh seemed much more, you know, obviously the Rangers got their chance against Pittsburgh, but it just seemed like, yeah, I guess I was expecting, and maybe because they walked through the first two periods was why, but I don't know. I just think the Rangers were able to still create against Carolina, and Carolina would then fall back into defensive structures. So, you know, and that's to be expected because some of the same players I would complain about years ago in Brendan Smith, Brady Shea, and Tony D'Angelo are three of their defensemen. So that would totally make sense, right? But so the opportunities will be there. But it's just really raw and stings right now. And I'm sure James is furious and in a bad mood. So sorry, James, wherever you're at. But yeah, I mean, again, it wasn't I thought they were going to embarrass themselves in game one, and that wasn't the case. They failed to, you know, they just missed too many chances, and you knew it was going to come back to bite them, and it does, which sucks. All right. Any other Rangers related news? A big thing is that for the first time since November when he got hurt, Sammy Blais skated today with the team at optional practice in a non-contact jersey, albeit. But I mean, since tearing his ACL, he's been out since November. It is, you know, it's now May, so it's been quite a while. But and when asked about it, Gallant did not rule him out for this playoffs, but, you know, he said the playoffs. He didn't say this round like he had said with Mott. And I think the writing on the wall is that if he's going to come back, the Rangers have to survive the series, which is a tall order right now, looking the way it's looking. So that stings. But, you know, I mean, a good sign, and you're happy for him just being around the team. And it just really, obviously, not having Gaudreau right now and not having him right now, it really stings because the Rangers are having matchup problems right now. And you just wonder, would it be different if they had those two guys? You know, it's tough because you can only speculate. You know, maybe they're just as, they have just as many troubles defending at times and 5-on-5, but it would sure go a long way, especially with the injuries to this team looking depleted and the fact the fourth line, you know, Revo makes this fourth line slow as molasses that, and then Rooney has no offensive instincts whatsoever. So yeah, it would be a huge boost to get him back, but he's not coming back this series against the Hurricanes. And it's, like I said, it's looking like a tall order for the Rangers to get out of this round. So yeah, that's good news, but also, you know, I don't want to give too much false hope to Rangers fans. Well, I mean, before I end this one, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the other things going on in the league right now. We have the Battle of Alberta also starting tonight, which is awesome. It's actually, I think, the puck's dropping as I record this right now. That should be a very awesome series to watch. I would say that I was surprised at the lack of animosity in the Rangers Canes game. It really wasn't that chippy of a game. You shouldn't have that problem with Calgary and Edmonton. I forget when the last time they met in the playoffs was, but you know, just that feud and that rivalry, and just having guys like Matthew Tkachuk and Evander Kane and Darnell Nurse, you know, and just Lucic and Nikita Zadorov. It's just, it should be a very, very, very hard-nosed series, guys trying to take as much out of each other as they can. And so it should be a heck of a lot of fun. I can't wait to watch it as a hockey fan. So yeah, I'm excited for that to get started. Tampa able to down the Cats last night in pretty convincing fashion. You know, I think the Panthers' woes in net with Bobrovsky kind of making themselves kind of apparent. And just, yeah, once Tampa looked like they were on the ropes at times versus the Leafs, but once they got through that series, it almost like the flip has been switched in there, and just we winner mode without Braden Point. Kucherov really steps up as the most dangerous player on the ice. And, you know, he just has one assist on a goal where he absolutely embarrasses Ekblad, just going full speed down the ice, just a little shimmy shake to step around him and then just threads it on a, you know, just to, I forget who even put it in. Maybe it was Palat or something, but, or Belmar. I don't know. Is Belmar on Tampa or is he on, I don't know. He might be on the Avalanche. Whatever, whoever it was. Just for a tap in, you know, he was amazing. Hedman and McDonough continue to be horses. That team knows how to win. All they do is win no matter what. I don't know the rest of the lyrics of that song. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if how the Cats look in game two, especially because it's being played in their barn. James and I were joking with each other how happy both teams must be. You know, they met last year, but just the fact that after traveling back and forth between Toronto and Florida, I'm sure they're thrilled to just be able to get on a Greyhound and spend a couple hours, or hell, even just get on the plane and spend 30 minutes in the air and then just be down. So not have to really go far at all, because they're literally just going across the state, you know, so. Don't have to travel very far, and in the playoffs, it's a big thing, because traveling also take, you have enough wear and tear in your body as it is, and traveling is a big part of it. So being able to sleep in their own beds all series and never in a hotel is huge. So just for those comforts make all the difference in the world. So in terms of just feeling comfortable and at ease and ready to play. So, but yeah, I would say, honestly, it wasn't the game itself wasn't the most compelling. It just kind of felt like as time went on, Tampa just pulled ahead and just kept they just didn't take their foot off the gas, and it wasn't like high flying. It was just, they got, you know, converted on chances and when they had to, and yeah, not the most exciting game, but very, very businesslike from Tampa. And they just, you can tell why they're, you know, back-to-back Stanley Cup champions going for a third. Not surprised by the Avalanche winning against the Blues in OT. I mean, if it wasn't for Binnington, it wouldn't have even gotten that far. But I expect the Blues to come back. I think they weren't ready. I think what they played they played an inferior team in the Wild in the first round, where it was more of a heavy game, and they weren't. I don't think they were ready for the speed at which the Avalanche come at you. Not, but most people aren't. I think the Avalanche probably end up buzzsawing everyone who's in front of them this year. But I think you'll see a little bit of a pushback from the Blues that they didn't really get so much from Nashville in the first round. Just too much pride. Even if they're losing, it's going to get ugly, because I just know when you have guys like O'Reilly and some of the other Stanley Cup vets on St. Louis, they're not going to, even if they start getting embarrassed, they're going to go down swinging and they're going to make you pay for it, or at least, you know, get some form of whatever form of retaliation they can get. And if they can't get it in the, you know, the game sheet, they're going to get it in the corners and just in scrums and whistles and things of that nature. So, yeah, I mean, that's a continuing story, and it still will be a fun series to watch. You know, obviously, it's just the Avalanche is so damn impressive. And again, I guess maybe the silver lining of not advancing is don't have to see the Rangers get put through their buzzsaw like so many other teams have so far. Yeah. All right. Anything else? Oh, not much other than, you know, I don't know if James and I ever, because the Rangers had their own series going on, we never really got a chance to talk about Barry Trotz being fired or let go or relieved of his duties by the New York Islanders. You know, there's a lot of speculation out there about why that might be. I think it's pretty clear that based on exit interviews, the younger players, your Matthew Barzells and your Beauvilliers, are just, he's tough on them. He's very strict when it comes to his system. It's his way or the highway. And when you're a kid like a Matthew Barzell, who you're the most gifted player on the team, and yet they play a style that maybe caps your offensive output at, you know, 50 points, maybe. You're starting to cost yourself some money, and it just kind of limits what you're good at, which is free association or freewheeling. And he wants you to play very workmanlike regimented hockey, and that's not him. So I can understand him being like, I don't like playing in the system. Yeah, it's great to win and all that, but this team is now getting older and they need to embrace their youth more, and the youth don't want to play that way, unfortunately. So obviously the truth is in the middle. It's like, you got to have structure, overall team structure, but at the same time, you have to be able to take chances and risks, you know. And I don't know if that's Barry's style. He's his way, like I said, it's his way of the highway. So I guess that became apparent. There was also some contract rumors. I'm sure it was a lot of things, and we'll never find out because Lou Lamoriello, you know, keeps his secrets to the grave. But they promote Lane Lambert, who was Barry's, you know, assistant. It was his right-hand man. So I'm sure he was the players, they're familiar there. He'll probably adjust his system. Maybe it won't be too different. Maybe it'll take, it's like a more offensive-leaning version, but still similar to what Barry was coaching, because, again, they worked together for so long. Just maybe not being as rigid as Trotz had them be at times, which will help free them up a little bit. Maybe if they give up, they'll make some, yeah, we'll be a little bit less stout defensively if it means we can generate more offense and just allow some of our more offensive players to play their games and be creative. So the question is, Barry Trotz, best coach in the league, now in the market. We know he's already interviewed with the Winnipeg Jets, which is interesting because he is from Winnipeg. He has ties there. There's speculation that he eventually wants to transition to a management role, either a general manager or, you know, executive or whatever. So I will see if that plays into it. We know he's supposed to have an interview with Philly in the coming days, which is very interesting. And the Vegas Golden Knights relieve Pete DeBoer of his head coaching duties. So he could potentially, I'm sure he's going to interview there now, because they're clearly not happy about missing the playoffs. But we know, if we know anything about, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights ownership and their Kelly McCrimmon, their GM, is that they like shiny new things and they pay out a premium for them. And when it doesn't work, they jettison them. So they really have to be careful, because you can get a reputation real fast for being just not a reliable place to play or stay. You know, you hire DeBoer was what? Turk brings them to the Stanley Cup final. They go to the playoffs the next year, maybe don't do as well. And then he's out in what, year three, or in the early in year three? I forget when it was. Same thing with, they bring on DeBoer, who is their nemesis from, you know, San Jose. And again, he gets what, 2.5 to 3 seasons, and then now he's out. You gotta be careful. You can't make it a revolving door of players and coaches. It's just, there needs to be some stability there. Because they're clearly trying to chase the magic from that first cup run, and in a lot of ways I think it's hurt them. But listen, they still have some good players. They have Eichel now, obviously. They have Petrangelo. They have Mark Stone, who's amazing. And yeah, they have, you know, they have other support guys who are maybe not superstars, but they're stars in their own right. And Pat Chiaretti, and we'll see what happens with Riley Smith and Jonathan Marchessault and you know, William Karlsson and those type of guys. But interesting to see. Maybe Trotz to fit there. Could be just what the doctor ordered, especially if you have the thought of him having Mark Stone to play with as a defensive forward is probably a very enticing thing for Barry. And who knows? So interesting to see where Barry ends up. Like I said, best coach in the league. So he's shown that even with a maybe a less talented roster, he can bring them to a conference finals and make them formidable playoff machines. So It'll be interesting to see what happens to Barry Trotz where he ends up. All right. So to summarize this podcast, the Rangers made some improvements, almost got the job done in game one, and then just couldn't hold on for the full 60 minutes. They missed some chances that ultimately ended up biting them, and then they lose in overtime off of a unlucky goal. But it kind of shows that in the playoffs, you have to be the aggressor. You have to dictate the terms, and you have to put yourself in the position where the luck can break your way. And just the Rangers did not do that enough, unfortunately. So, but hey, they had a lot of luck in round one. So this is important growth. The kid line continues to be dominant, and just be more of a factor in the games. And you're seeing their ice time rise. You're seeing them out there more and more. You're seeing Gallant trust them more and more. Unfortunately, they were on the ice when the Rangers got scored on. But again, I don't know if it's necessarily their fault. It's just the Rangers overall as a team were slowly losing the plot there. And, you know, Kako will be haunted forever about that net. But they got he doesn't have too much time to sulk. And he's got to continue to play the way they're playing because the kid line is good. And they're probably one of the Rangers' few bright spots right now. So you got to keep going. There's not enough time to sulk. You look on to game two. And, yeah, again, you just, I said before, this is house money for me. Just, even if you lose, just play the game the right way. Don't embarrass yourselves and just keep on growing.
Thank you for listening to the Broadway Boys podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Boys Pod, and please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, or thehockeypodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.